The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
You want the good news, you want the bad news?
I don't like either one of those options.
Your words are super wise, man.
You are a prophet. You deserve a prophet.
You do whatever you want. Who am I to tell you what to do?
But you're a psychologist.
Well, I know less than you do.
You're making me a better parent and a better wife, and thank God you're on the radio.
What planet are you on? I don't buy any of that stuff.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
What are you talking about?
You make my afternoon really fun. Enjoy you.
You're about the most exciting thing I have right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
I cannot hear that dear woman say, "You make my day," and not think about the comedian who said, somebody came up to him with her delightful southern accent, "I'm Georgia." He said, "You're in Georgia." No, I'm in Georgia. My mom in Georgia. Your mom and you are in Georgia. This is Dr. A. Thanks for joining me here on this E-Person Monday. Once again, I have gotten grief because if I am to be fully linguistically sensitive, I don't even use the word person. I got rid of email because that was just not linguistically sensitive. It was patriarchal. I got rid of it. Now somebody's saying, person has the word son in it, one of its syllables. I'm not ready to go quite that far yet, but something tells me I'm going to be pushed to go quite that far, given the way it's gone. Good to have you with me here on The Doctor Is In. As I said, we take E... I almost said mails. E missives. I can't even say missives. It's got miss in it. E missives. Things, communications that you send me via the internet, I keep screening for every word that I say, wondering if there is some linguistically insensitive syllable within the word. You know how hard that is to do? So far, I'm doing okay. We'll get to your e-peoples in just a second. Had a mom call me one time. And she said that she had gotten two or three calls from the volunteer CCD teachers at her children's parish about her son's behavior. And she said to me, she believes that the woman who was running the class was not a very good disciplinarian. And as a matter of fact, there were three or four or five other kids in there who were probably giving her just as much grief as her son. She said, if she were a better disciplinarian, he wouldn't be doing this. So I asked her, do you want your son to behave only for people who can control him? Because you see, a police officer can control me. What if your son decides that this is a person he can take advantage of? Is that what you want? Do you want him only to cooperate when, in fact, the person that he's cooperating for is skillful or kind or any other attribute that would make him be more pleasant to him or her? Is that what you want? Now, I didn't say it that way. I just said, do you want your child to behave only for those people who control him? And she said, no. I said, well, then you're going to have to be the one to do something about this. But I'm not there. Yes, I know you're not. But you are getting reports. And you can do something about it, can you not? When we adopted our twins, they were four at the time. Pretty undisciplined. Very undisciplined. Okay, extremely undisciplined. They were in, this is when I was away from the church, they were in a religious ed class at the non-denominational where we attended. And my son punched his teacher. He went up behind her and he hit her. Now, that's not good. That isn't good. Because I said, what hand did you use? Because you don't, yeah, if he uses his left hand, he can't play any infield position other than first base. All right. All right, I didn't say that. My wife would have shot me with her right hand. So, he got in serious trouble. I mean, he got in major league trouble. Their attitude was, oh, come on, we understand John's history. We understand that he really is learning slowly to be more socialized. We know he's with you guys, and you're trying to work on it. But that was no reason. Actually, they didn't do anything about it. We had to. I don't know about you. I really just don't want my kid punching teachers. I don't know. Call me weird. Call me odd. Okay. Call me a Neanderthal throwback. So he got in major league trouble. I can't count how many privileges he lost. And I asked the teacher, please tell me if he does not cooperate for you. I know you don't have much leverage. I mean, what's she going to do? All she can do really is call us out of the service. That's about it. She going to make him sit? Maybe he won't sit. What's she going to do? She going to take away snack? Maybe he'll throw a fit. Was all new turf, and it was making me look real bad. Do you realize how much business I lost at that church? Oh, I estimate a couple $1,000 at least. People thinking, why would I go to him? See what his kid did? His kid's like the worst kid in the class. You know. So, as a result, our attitude always was, if you run up against someone, whether it's a teacher, a coach, grandma, a babysitter, a neighbor lady, whomever it is that you do not behave well for, you will answer to us. Now, interestingly enough, we ran into a bit of a problem with a preschool teacher. My son, oh, it was such an egregious offense, I hesitate to say it over the air. And if you have little children, you might want to cover their ears. We found out that Andrew, at age 4, somewhere in there, was playing in the cornmeal box at preschool. You know, they have different boxes. They have a cornmeal box, a sand box, the toy box, the blocks box. I don't know. He took the cornmeal, and in an impulse, he flung it. I hope he used his right hand. He flung it at the kid next to him. This is awful. Can you believe this? I mean, I wondered if there was a kernel of truth in what she was telling me. So, am I going too fast for you guys? I got two engineers in here. Neither one of them even snickered when I said kernel of truth. So, we told her we found out about this. Now, how do we find out about this? Well, he had a sister. He had a sister in the same school. Now, she wasn't in the same class, but so what? She knows everything. She's a little girl. She couldn't wait to tell us. And the interesting thing is she couldn't read or write, but somehow she wrote a written report to us about what Andrew did. So he got in big trouble. And he lost Mr. Rogers. And that was the one where they showed how they put makeup on the Hulk, which is really a good one. All right. He lost Mr. Rogers and lost a whole bunch of things. We told his teacher what we did. And she said, well, you know, I really want him to trust us. I don't want him to think that I'm going to tattle on his behavior. Now, this is standard child development thinking, by the way. And then she said something to the effect, you sound like my grandfather. I went, huh? What? She said, well, you know, if you get in trouble at school, you're going to get in trouble at home. And I went, yeah. I said, Andrew broke two rules. He broke your rule, which is don't throw cornmeal. But he broke my rule, which is a much, much more serious rule. Obey your teacher. That's where he got into trouble. So one of the things that we learned was if people can't deal well, discipline-wise, with a child, and it's our child, and our child recognizes this and pushes and attempts things that he or she would never try with anybody else, then mom and dad have to do it. Mom and dad will do it. We're the ones responsible. My friend said, "Well, what should I do then?" I said, "Well, will this teacher tell you every time that your son gives her trouble? I don't know. How about if you went into class?" And there was silence. "That you could go in there and you could just sit. That'll embarrass the snot out of him." He's about 8 or 9 years old or something like that at the time. So he's old enough to be embarrassed by mom. I said, "Wear the pants with the feathers. That'll really do it." She said, "Well, I suppose I could." I said, "Well, you know, Barb, you just don't want him to do this to somebody who is volunteering their time. And here's the other thing. Yes, there were other kids in there who were taking advantage of her lack of leverage. I mean, how much leverage does a CCD teacher have, really? They were taking advantage of her. You don't want your child to be like that. If those parents are not going to do anything about their children, you're going to do it about you're going to do something about your child. So, that's what I think. When we come back, we're going to dive into the e-person stack, see what we have. I'm Dr. Ray.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. My latest book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him, talks about how Jesus was 2,000 years ahead of modern enlightened psychology. If he's God, he knows the absolute best way to live, whether psychology agrees or whether it doesn't. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to get your copy. Jesus will tell you the best way to live.
It's as though the secular press has to shoehorn matters concerning fidelity or infidelity to church teaching into political labels of conservative versus liberal. And those political dichotomies are not entirely meaningless, but they most usually distort the discussion. This discussion is about receiving Christ worthily. And that is not a political discussion. And by the way, this discussion is not even new. If you go back to 1998, they also addressed the question of it from Living the Gospel of Life, but again in 2006, in Happier Those Who Are Called to His Supper. For Pope Francis, he drafted, when he was Archbishop of Buenos Aires, the Parousia document. The U.S. bishops are now forced to address this problem because we have now a Catholic president who is receiving Holy Communion, while at the same time he is a champion of expanded abortion rights.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta. 4 Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Doesn't that sound like something out of the 70s? You know, you just kind of picture somebody, just kind of... She's got two kids, and they're in the middle of this suburban area, and they're just kind of walking along. A little bit of a carryover from Leave It to Beaver. Gee, lady. All right. This is E-Person Monday. I'm Dr. Ray. I very much want to tackle this one. I've discussed it before, but it is illustrative of how things can be confusing. Here we go. I recently heard you speak on the issue of spanking children, and you mentioned that there were no research studies that confirm that it is harmful to spank children. All right, now that whole sentence is a mishearing, and I will explain how that is. I mentioned this to a friend of mine who is a social worker, and I don't know, my rough estimate is that 98.26% of social workers think spanking is an awful, evil, horrible, terrible thing, whose specialty is, here we go, listen, is working with abused children. Boy, there's so much to take apart in this e-person, I will. She sent me the following link to a study from the University of Texas, which claims that spanking, harmful to children, has been confirmed by 5 decades of research. All right, we're going to have to define research, okay? Well, I'll get to that. Maybe I misunderstood what you mentioned on the radio, or maybe it was an old broadcast. I'm wondering what you think of this, Bob. Okay, Bob, here we go. In fact, I'm going to stand by my original statement, and I've got the research backing me up. In homes where there is love and stability and people who have swatted bottoms, mostly in the first several years of life, there is no research that says this is all terrible and awful and breeds all kinds of problems in children. There is not. But what do I do about this 5 decades of research that this social worker pointed Bob to? It's very simple to answer that. What is the definition of research? For example, I basically said it is impossible to design a study that will explore the ill effects of spanking in a traditional research structure. In other words, you have a control group and you have an experimental group. The experimental group is told to spank children. The control group is told under no circumstances to not. However, you do a double-blind placebo-controlled, which is the gold standard for research, which essentially says that neither group knows what they're doing. So the spankers don't know that they spank, and the non-spankers don't know that they don't spank. And then after 6 months, you flip the groups. Then you say, okay, now, those of you who didn't spank, now you can spank. Those of you who do spank, stop spanking. Okay, you can't do that. So all of this stuff, there's no doubt about this because I've seen these things. They're surveys. They're surveys, and they're usually retrospective surveys. In other words, they look back, and they say, in fact, were you a victim of corporal punishment? Now, corporal punishment is this massively broad thing. It goes all the way from a swat on the bottom to slamming you up against a wall. I've seen surveys that say that something like 90-plus percent of guys incarcerated experienced violent spanking as children. Well, I don't doubt that for a moment. Why? Because likely they were poorly raised. When you are poorly raised, you get ugly as a parent. Your parent gets ugly. Sorry for the structure there. You homeschooling moms know I mixed up my dependent and independent clauses. What happens is the parenting is really bad. The spanking is one byproduct of the bad parenting. It's usually done out of control. It's usually done when I've had enough. And it's usually done with no balance. So it is ugly. It isn't a discipline thing. It's an ugly, over-the-top response thing. And what happens is these surveys clump all this together and say, see what this does? You see what this does? And then they say, well, because it's so easy to get carried away, then you should do none at all. It's kind of like alcoholics. You can't have a drink of beer because, well, I'm an alcoholic, so therefore if I have one drink of beer, I'm going to go all the way to the end. By the way, research says that's not necessarily true in all cases, but I'll leave that for an aside for a moment. So what happens is, if in fact spanking in its very extreme form, which it's not spanking, it's abuse, you don't do it at all. You don't swat a three-year-old's bottom. I'm not an advocate of spanking. I don't care whether you do or you don't. That's your decision. But I would suggest that you do it confidently, well, in context, and you know what you're doing and why, etc. Now, when it's defined that way, yeah, there's no research that says it. You can't. You can't. First of all, you can't study it that way. These are all surveys. And yes, there's no question that when people have been raised in a hostile, abusive, nasty, broken up kind of environment, corporal punishment is right in there. And it is associated with these terrible outcomes. No question. I don't argue that for a moment. What I'm saying is they're comparing apples and oranges, is what they're doing. Let me offer you something else on this. There's a lot of ways to approach this. One of the arguments is that this kind of corporal punishment has been associated with all kinds of ugly outcomes. People who don't live well, people who are incarcerated, people who are drug and alcohol abusers, people who abuse their own children, people who are aggressive. It's been associated with all kinds of nastiness. Okay. And they make the tie. Corporal punishment, ugly, leads to ugly. Take the U.S. Go back, let's just say two generations, all the way back through the 1800s. Pretty much what most parents did in terms of what would be called spanking would now be abuse. Switches, paddles, really, really hard stuff. Whoopings, okay? That if you did it now, you either get carted off to jail or somebody would report you. All right. If, in fact, all that automatically led to all these outcomes, why do we not have the statistics that are as ugly then as now? That's not fair, Dr. Ray. You're comparing apples and oranges. No, no, I'm not comparing apples and oranges. You are. You're the one who's saying that in and of itself, any kind of spanking, no matter how loving the parent, no matter how balanced, no matter what the context, automatically causes these ugly future outcomes. Well, if that's the case, given your reasoning, given what you said, we should have had one awfully maladjusted society 100 years ago. Awfully.
Well, Dr. Ray, things have changed radically.
My point exactly. They have changed radically. The family structure, what used to be considered healthy discipline, is now considered over-the-top discipline. So therefore, Bob, I think that explains it. And I get so frustrated at these people who cite these surveys. Were you spanked as a child? Oh, my gosh, yes, yes. My parents swung first and asked questions later. Ah, okay. Well, see, that's not balanced discipline. That isn't at all. Parents will say to me, well, what if I spank? I go, well, know when and know how, and it's not your main discipline. You can't have spanking be your main discipline. Kids misbehave too much. You know, the average 5-year-old is going to misbehave 10, 20 times a day. What, are you going to spank him 20 times a day? You can't do that. So, Bob, that is where it's at with that. Let me see where I'm at with time here, by the way. Where's the clock, guys? I got a few minutes. That one's on. All righty. Got it. Any more comments about this? I was on a TV show once. The lady was on there. She was child development. And mostly child development people and social workers are by far the most anti-spanking under any circumstances, no matter what. It's awful, terrible, awful, and horrible. I brought up the point. I said, you know, our media rots out souls. Our media can take a child's soul and just twist it into darkness. But yet we can't capture our media, can we? We have to say, well, you know, turn it off. Turn it off. No, we have no impulse to protect children from this wretched stuff that assaults them from every direction. But if you swat a bottom in a store and somebody sees you, woo! Mrs. Paddlebottom, come out with your wooden spoon above your head. We have you on a concealed paint stick charge. This is what we've done. I mean, we've created a society that will rot out a child's soul. And we don't seem to be able to control it at all. And furthermore, you could let your kid watch any piece of rot gut sewage that is available and nobody can turn you in. They can't do a thing about that. But if somebody sees you swatting a bottom in your front yard, they can call on you and you will be investigated. Isn't it an interesting irony? Irony can be pretty ironic, can't it? All right. So that one I had to deal with. I've done whole workshops on this because there are so many angles one can take in this whole spanking issue. I remember once. Do I have enough time to do this, guys? Got enough time? Can't see that. 30 seconds? No, I don't have time. All right, music's coming. Maybe I'll address it after the break. I'm Dr. Ray. This is The Doctor Is In. This is E-Person Monday. We'll be right back.
60 Seconds with Father Mitch Pacwa.
The state has responsibility to orient things, but they can't take over the rights of the family, like in China, to have one child and that's it. It's a disaster over there. How many tens of millions of abortions have gone on? And one of the things that, as a result of that, is because of the preference to have boy children rather than girls, you have, for every 1,000 boys, there are 850 girls. This is a great imbalance. Same thing is going on in northern India. So this is where the government cannot take away the primary and inalienable responsibility of married couples and families. And they cannot employ methods which fail to respect the person and fundamental human rights. Beginning with the right to life, the government cannot force you to kill innocent human beings and still be a humanistic government. It's an evil government.
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
What comes to your mind when you hear the word passion? Passion often signifies intensity of emotions and feelings, frequently in terms of lust. But the Catholic Catechism tells us passions are neither good nor bad in and of themselves. In other words, passions are morally good if they contribute to a good action, and evil if they bring about the opposite result. The most fundamental passion is love, says the Catechism. It is aroused by attraction to the good, the desire to attain the good, and fulfilled by joy and pleasure once the good is possessed. Evil, on the other hand, arouses hatred, aversion, and fear. Passions are the passageway connecting the senses and the mind. Jesus said the source of all passions was the human heart. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
What are you playing? Music that makes me sound old? Come on. If you're going to do that, just go all the way to Overture of 1812, 3 years before Teresa Tomio was born. Thanks for joining me, Dr. Ray Guarendi. This is The Doctor Is In. This is the Monday version, E-Person Monday, where I alternate back and forth between those emails that I print out and those that are on my phone. So I just did a printout. I wanted to just add a little codicil to this E-Person by Bob regarding spanking. I was on a TV show. This is a long time ago. And there was a child development person there. And child development people, probably of all the professions, are the most egregiously against spanking. I've met very few child development people that don't think that spanking is flat out evil, and it's in every form, shape, when, how, who, doesn't matter. In and of itself. Objectively evil. And the host asked me, Ray, have you ever swatted your children? And I said, yeah. I said, some of them got swats when they were littler. Some of them didn't. I mean, some of them just didn't ever have that happen. She wheeled on me. Your children fear you. I said, how do you know that? See, this is the kind of logic you deal with. That automatically in my home, no matter that there would be love, no matter that there would be stability, that automatically I am somebody that they have to tremble and wet themselves when they're around. I said, how could you say that? You don't know me or my children. And then I said something that really bothered her. I could tell. I said, besides, I want them to fear me. Ooh, that really made her mad. I said, under certain circumstances, I fear judges if I'm in their courtroom. I fear a police officer who comes and says, step out of the car, please put your hands on the hood. I fear that. It's context. Some of my friends are judges. Some of my friends are police officers. I don't fear them in all other contexts. So if you use the word fear as something awful, terrible, evil, rather than as it is oftentimes used as respect, that's what I wanted. I wanted them to understand that under certain circumstances, they should be worried about daddy's reaction. But see, she couldn't see it that way. It was just automatic. If you swatted a bottom, you breed fear, you create children who are going to be aggressive and nasty, and that's just the way it is. No questions asked, automatic. All right, enough of that. Oh, wait a minute, that's Bob. Let me go to Dr. Ray, I heard you talking about panic attacks yesterday, and it was making me nervous, so I quit listening. I don't think she's teasing. I think this is legit, because if you go on with the rest of the e-person, I think you said not to leave the situation. What I said was that that is the most go-to response when you're in a situation. And again, a panic attack may not be tied to the situation. Many panic attacks just seem to occur at random. But if you're having a phobic reaction, an anxiety reaction to a particular situation or within a particular situation, is more often the way it is. You're having this adrenaline surge and your body is reacting as though it's in danger and you're sitting in a restaurant. And restaurants are not fearful places unless there's little kids all over the place. But short of that, not a problem. And I said, most people leave when they experience that kind of reaction. They get out of the situation. And I said, in fact, that is one of the least helpful things to do, because all it does is, for the moment, tempers the anxiety, but creates a higher probability that in the future it's going to happen again in the same circumstance, or in what the shrinks call generalizing of circumstances. In other words, it isn't just restaurants anymore. Now it's family gatherings. It's not just family gatherings anymore. Now it's shopping at the mall. So, she says, I have had to leave the situations that were causing my panic attack. Now, that's what most people think. I have no choice. I got to get out of this. The panic is so overwhelming. It's so scary. It's so frightening. I'm losing my mind. I could be having a heart attack. I don't know what's gone wrong with my body. I got to get out of here. I got to do anything I can to lessen this experience. That's what most people think. I have to leave. In most cases, you don't have to leave. I know that seems hard to believe. Okay. I would be stopping on a bridge or driving off the side of a bridge. I'm afraid to put myself back in situations because I might do something dangerous. Let me respond to this. I'll use a different name here, Carla. That's what it feels like. It feels like I am out of control. It feels like whatever is happening to me is so overwhelming that I can't think straight. And people will tell me that. They will say that. So they will say, if I don't leave the situation, I don't know what I will do. So therefore, rather than get on an interstate and try to merge into traffic, which drives me crazy and makes me so anxious, and I'm afraid I'll just sideswipe a car, I can't go. But in fact, in most cases, you're not going to do that. If you are a reasonably thinking individual in most other situations, you're not going to drive off that bridge. People will say, I have that thought. It's this very threatening thought. What if? And people tell me this all the time. Well, you know, I'll be at a family gathering and I'll be thinking to myself, what if I just went over and punched somebody? Oh, I don't even want to think that. I could punch somebody. I don't want to punch anybody, but I don't know. I got this thing in my head that I'll just punch somebody. They do this. And this is just your mind running rampant. You're not going to punch somebody. Or maybe they're standing on a ladder and they're thinking, what if I have the urge to jump down? Just jump. I'm 9 feet up. I'll at least break an ankle. I don't want to get up on that ladder. I can't get up on that ladder because I've just got this thought going through my head. I'm going to jump. Well, you got to ask yourself, are you really? Or is it just this thought that is going through your head? She says, off that subject, this is like a dual E person. I'm disappointed that some people in my family would rather spend hours on Facebook or Instagram than talk to me. Well, yeah, that is sadly the way much of it is now. I don't like Facebook because I feel like I'm spying on people who would rather be on Facebook than share their lives through conversation. Am I outdated? No, I think you're outdated in the sense that you're not the norm. If you want to call the norm what people do as the way to do it, yeah. But I always will repeat the words of Bishop Sheen. Wrong is wrong, even if everybody is wrong. And right is right, even if no one is right. So in fact, what's going to happen, Carla, is that you may feel like a little bit more of a sliver group, because as more people get involved in sharing their lives via Facebook and not conversing with you, that is a new reality. Okay. All righty. What's that clock say? Oh, yeah. I got to go. All right. Taking another break. When we come back, what do I got in the stack here? Where is it? I want to give you a heads up on where I'm going with this. I'll find it. I had a relatively recent e-person. It's on my phone. I got to dig it out. It's coming, and it was a good one. It illustrates what can happen if you do something that is really against what your kid wants.
Call from God. Father Mitch Pacwa shares his experience.
I certainly had a bit of opposition. My father wasn't pleased with this at all, and he kept arguing with me. Once when I was 12, he said to me, what do you want to be a priest for? Why don't you be a doctor? You don't have to be a priest to help people. You can be a doctor and get married, have kids. And I said to him then, Dad, if I was a doctor and I help people get better, that would be very good. But later on, they're going to die anyway. So if I'm a priest and I hear somebody's confession and they go to heaven, that lasts forever. So that's better. And he didn't know what to say. And he continued to oppose the idea over the next years. Yet that didn't stop me. And even when he said, I'm going to disinherit you if you become a priest. And on the day of my first Mass, he did. But as I also said to him then, he told me, okay, you're out of my will. I said, Dad, I can't keep it anyway. It doesn't matter. I'm a Jesuit, and we can't keep the money, so it really doesn't affect me. The issue is I'm trying to follow what God, our Lord, is asking of me. And this has been where I have found the greatest joy, that doing what I believe through my own prayer and through reflection and thinking about it and moving from a little boy's idea of what a priest would be like all the way to now in my early 50s, you know, realizing that this is exactly what I think is going to please God the most. And that's what I want to do, to please God.
For information on the priesthood or religious life, log on to www.ewtn.com/religious-life.
You're gone with the 1970s sitcom bumper music motif. Is that what you're doing there, son? See, I'm getting to the point where I call everybody son. And the guy's 60 years old. Hey, son! And I don't like people walking on my lawn. Kids, get off my lawn! I'm Dr. Ray. Program The Doctor is in Monday through Friday. Co-production EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Ave Maria Radio Communications. Some 400-plus stations, as well as Sirius Satellite Channel 130, as well as all the various apps and all the website streaming. There's just so many ways now to listen to Catholic media, listen to any media, really. All right, this is E-Person. I'm on the phone. My 11-year-old son ran away from home this afternoon. We found him 2 hours later with the help of the police. He's the youngest of four boys. No family problems. All the brothers are good boys. Well, what's going on here? The next sentence. We recently took away video games from him, and since that day, he has changed completely. He now says he hates us and wants to make us suffer. We've not given in to his demands of the video games. On the contrary, we took all devices since he was sneaking some in the middle of the night. First time one of our sons has done anything like this. I was raking leaves last fall. That's when your ache leaves, isn't it? Neighbor guy comes up. Did you see a 15-year-old girl come through here? When? Just a few minutes ago. No, nobody came through here. And he looked at me and he said, my daughter just ran away. And he ran back to the house. Well, I finished raking my leaves. I mean, you got to rake your leaves, you know what I mean? After I was done raking my leaves, I went up to his house. I knocked on the door. I said, did you find her? He goes, yeah, we found her. And then I said, you took her cell phone, didn't you? He goes, how'd you know that? I said, because the video games, the cell phones, any of that kind of technology, parents underestimate the control it has over their kids. And in many cases, the kids react unlike anything you ever anticipated they would react like. He said, you're right. Her grades are terrible. So the first time we took it, the grades came back up. But this time, when we gave it back, the grades started sliding again, so we took it. And she ran. Folks, parents will come to me in shock over how their kids reacted when they took away certain technologies. Now, this particular situation with this young man, all right, several things. One, I would want to know if they were in my office, when did his video game attachment start? How much have you allowed it? Thinking that, for example, your older three boys, they dealt with it. You let them some, but they weren't as interested in it as he is. All right, some kids are just more susceptible to this stuff. He apparently has been doing it a lot more than you know. Either at friend's house, and you said he sneaks it in the middle of the night. So therefore, he's doing it more than you know. What kinds of games? I suspect this is not John Madden football or MLB. I suspect it could be some of the more violent, nasty, rot-gut kind of games that are now popular with pre-adolescent and adolescent boys. These games are designed by the best people in the world to grab your son by the throat and say, we own you. You must have this level of stimulation. I call them video cocaine. What they do is through brilliant stimulation, fast-paced action, incredible graphics, non-stop reward, all the stuff that behavior psychology says is the ingredients, are the ingredients to capture somebody's attention and hold it, they do it. They're so good at it. So my question is, how much of it has he had up to this point? Secondly, you know your son. You know how much he's easily attracted to this, more so than your other three boys. It's two. Three, what are you going to do about the fact that he ran away? What are you going to do? Now, again, I can't tell you because I don't know your situation, but what's clear to me is that the games are causing problems. And now maybe there are behavior problems too, and much of the time there are, but the games are causing problems. And a parent comes into my office, and typically they bring themselves in because of what you just said. We had a kid do something really extreme, and it threw us for a loop. As I talk to them, I find out that, in fact, this is just the latest in a string. It was the worst, but prior to this, there was a lot of ongoing discipline, respect, problems, deception, those kinds of things. They were there, and it had been building. So you have this event that rocked the whole family, that rocked the parents, and that is what brought the whole thing to my attention. I don't know if that's the case with your son. If, in fact, in every way, shape, or form, he seems to be a cooperative young man. However, you took his video games and he went nuts, which can tell you that these video games, for him, are particularly troublesome and harmful. So now you're faced with two things. One, do you say no video games of any type and take the repercussions, which I suspect he'll get very sneaky on you.
He's going to get them at friend's house. He's going to figure out ways. Or two, do you say, I'm going to give you a certain limited amount of certain kinds of video games. Backyard football. Something, race cars. Something that is much more benign, does not involve bloodying up people all over the place and killing everybody in sight. Now, the third thing is, what are you going to do if he runs away again? What are you going to tell him you will do? My daughter never ran away. She pulled a stunt. She pulled a major league stunt. She was 13. I said, JoJo, you have to understand, honey, if you leave, the first thing I'm going to do is call the police. I have to. I cannot allow you to just take off at age 13. And I don't know where it'll go from there. No idea. Know what the police will do. I don't know what the juvenile court will do. I don't know. All I do know is that it could be out of my hands. Now, that must have been enough to shake her up because she never ran. She's 31 now. As far as I know, she hasn't run away from home. So, given that, you really got to tell your son exactly what you're going to do if this happens again. This is not something that you trifle with. You know, you found him. He was punishing you. He also said something very interesting. He wants to punish us, and he tells us he hates us. And is this because, one, you took his games, or two, it's in a bigger context, which is you're too strict in his mind. You're weird in his mind. Because if he goes to school, he's going to see friends who have much more technological freedom than he does. And he doesn't understand. How could all those people be doing it wrong and you be doing it right? And he doesn't understand that. And it makes him resentful. I wrote a book called Raising Upright Children in an Upside Down World. And the first three chapters were spent on this whole phenomenon, which is, we didn't raise him that way. Why does he think this way? And I tell the parents, I understand. I believe you that you didn't raise him this way. But the culture did. And the culture is so seductive and so powerful that it can overwhelm parents if they're not aware of it. So I think these are now issues you're going to have to deal with your 11-year-old son regarding where it goes from here. I'm Dr. Ray.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Okay, I've been a Catholic for 5 years, but I suffered under a lot of things due to my Protestantism as a Pentecostal, and I just want to personally ask God to bless you for your ministry, for everything you do, and the help that you give people.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God. Father Benedict Groeschel.
I'm operating on the gifts of the Holy Spirit when I don't feel well, even when I'm annoyed, when I'm down and out. During my recovery from an automobile accident, immense numbers of people wrote to me and sent me emails, 50,000. And they told me how helpful they thought my talks on EWTN were to them. I'm delighted. But I want you to know, I'm nobody's fool. The talks that were helpful, the sentences that were helpful, the phrases that were helpful, came from the Holy Spirit. That's the work of the Holy Spirit. And the styrofoam packaging came from me. I did that. And styrofoam doesn't amount to very much.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Thanks for joining me here on the Doctor Is In Monday version, e-person, where we take on emails that you send in. I know I said mail. I slip every once in a while. You know, at my age, man, that kind of language slippage is very common because I've been saying mail all my life, and now I'm not allowed to say mail anymore. So what do? You know, like used to be you weren't allowed to say cuss words. Now you're not allowed to say a whole bunch of words that every week change. I can't keep track. You talked today about a priest. This is an older E person, but she is writing about something that came up in the show. You talked today about a priest who said that penitents come and will say they have no sins that they can remember. Yeah, I know. I've had priests tell me this. Somebody will come into the confessional. Father, I don't know what to tell you. You thought that it was pride. No, I don't think it's pride. It is pride. I have that problem, Dr. Ray. I had to say Dr. Ray because if I say I have that problem, you're going to think it's me having that problem. I have no pride. If I had children, whatever pride I had is gone. And this is very distressing to me. I ask the Lord morning and night to show me my sins. I know that I sin. Fish swim, birds fly, sinners sin. I do an examination of conscience, the beginning and end of the day, but I seldom come up with much. Occasionally, I will do something I know is wrong, and I confess that, but I'm frustrated and distressed by my inability to recognize my own sin. Well, God bless you, because you should be. In fact, okay, a couple things I can say about this. The examination of conscience. Father Larry Richards has a CD called Confession, and in it he goes through how to examine your conscience in a very brief way, a succinct way, and he brings up an awful lot of things for you to consider. That's the first thing. So get that. Second thing is, I find that many of my sins are sins of personal relationships where I might be self-seeking, or I might not be tolerant, or I might think critical thoughts that are not deserved. So a lot of that stuff is subtle. Yeah, I'm sure you don't go commit adultery, and I'm sure you probably haven't murdered anybody or stolen anything. So if you go after the big boys, if you go after the big persons, if you go after the big people, I don't know. I can't say if you go after the big girls. Nobody ever says that in reference to sin. It's the big boys. So if you do that, then I can see how you'd say, I don't commit those big boppers. But it's the more subtle stuff. It's the more stuff that doesn't come to our attention so easily. Now, I don't know if you're married or not. But if you are, spouse is a good place to start. Tell me the things that you see in me that I don't see in me. That's a good place to start. Just listen. Or if you have a good friend, ask your friend, hey, I really want to look at myself as Christ looks at me as best I can. I mean, we're not going to look at ourselves as Christ looks at us because he knows us better than we know ourselves by far. But you want to get closer, don't you? So rather than just saying, I don't steal, I've never punched anybody, I don't slash tires, I don't cuss, okay, but what about all the other stuff, the interpersonal stuff, and the thing that may be the most treacherous, and that is, I don't have any sins. Well, right there is one. Because St. John says, he who says he is without sin is a liar. Uh-oh. So if I would have asked you, do you lie? You'd say no. Yeah, you do. And you say you have no sin. That's a lie. Now you say, I recognize that. Sinner sin. I recognize I have sins. Just don't get specific. Isn't that interesting? I'm a sinner. I'll admit it. Well, what are your sins? Don't have any. Or I'm not aware of them. Well, wait a minute. How can you be a sinner and not have sins? Well, I may have them, but they're just not obvious to me. Well, you better start thinking a little harder then. Now, the problem here is that you don't want this to put you into some state of despair. You don't want to say, oh, no, I'm starting to recognize all kinds of things that are ugly in me, and I didn't think I had them, and I thought I was a wonderful person, and now I'm really ugly. This is awful. I don't know if I can go on with this stuff. No. You're recognizing reality. God loves you anyway, and it's good that you recognize this stuff. That's the way you want to be. So, my dear lady, just keep asking God, like you say, show me, I need to know, and show me some people who will tell me too. I'm Dr. Ray. I do have sins all over the place. I ain't telling you. My wife tells me. Walk with God. Stay on that path.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.